Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Yo, check it. This is Carl Kanai, Brooklyn, New York. I just finished doing my episode of Hollywood Unlocked. It's pretty dope. Melissa Ford, my man Jason, we talked about the beginning days of Carl Kanai. We talked about the crack era. We talked about Tupac, Biggie, Michael Jackson. Spread some knowledge on the business and how things went down. Carl Kanai, the originators. Definitely a show to watch. Everybody look out for it coming out soon. Peace.
Okay, so listen, I received some mail. You know, I use stamps.com, and stamps.com, you know, it's my friend for many reasons because of convenience. I don't have to go nowhere. Mm-hmm. Just sit in my house on my computer, go to stamps.com, and boom, I send bad news all day long. So you'd think they got stamps.com in prison because my ex is sending me notifications of him and his new girlfriend.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, I know that you'll get over it in about 3.5 seconds.
Well, you know, it's sort of like, you know, when you're texting a fight and you just hit them right back with something. Now with stamps.com, I could literally just shoot that letter right back. It takes 3 to 5 days to get there. Then it has to go through the handlers. Then once it gets to the cell block and sorted out amongst all the criminals, my ex finds out what the fuck I think about his new relationship.
Right. Well, I like stamps.com just because I'm old school and I love snail mail. I love sending personalized messages. My mom likes getting letters from me because she's creating a scrapbook, and so it really kind of works out for me.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell everybody about stamps.com and how they too can get in on the convenience of mailing shit from your house.
Exactly. Okay, so right now, if you guys go to stamps.com, before you do anything else, you got to click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in unlocked. That's stamps.com, and then enter unlocked. And you will... It includes $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and 4-week trial. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. But you know, the
don't say we don't do nothing for you guys.
Listen, folks, you don't just have to mail letters. You can actually mail packages. So, like, for example, when your ex get out of prison and you need to pack up all this shit and mail it to his new girlfriend out, you can actually use stamps.com to do that too.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you're starting an online boutique like every other girl is doing on Instagram, mm-hmm. well, stamps.com is going to be your best friend for mm-hmm. saving on postage, shipping, and handling.
You know, now that I'm over at Fashion Nova on the brand team, I wonder if I convert them to stamps.com, will I then get a residual?
You know what? It's worth the ask.
Ooh, it'd be worth, that's a lot of damn postage.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, listen, right now, if you go to, what do they need to do to get this free?
Just go to stamps.com and then click on the top left-hand corner, and there's a microphone there, and then you enter unlocked, and it's going to unlock your free trial. 4 weeks free, a digital scale, and $55 worth of free postage. That's a lot.
And if you're mailing stuff from a trap house, you better not use that digital scale for anything other than stamps.com. So go to stamps.com and enter unlocked.
Yes.
Get your free shit today. What up, everybody? This is Jason Lee, and this is Hollywood Unlocked Uncensored.
And I'm Melissa Ford, a.k.a. The Curve Queen.
And I'm Tonio Skits, a.k.a. Tonio Skits.
Yeah, Giovanni's out today. And we have the legendary, iconic man of fashion, Carl Kanai.
Hey, Carl.
Carl Kanai in the house. What's up, everybody?
Hey. So the last time we hung out, we were in Drury, Manchester, England.
Yep.
And, you know, it's crazy because when I, you know, Carl Kanai for me growing up young, you know, people think I'm Dominican, whatever. Mm. I'm a nigga. You know, I grew up wearing Carl Kanai clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, not grow up like as a little kid, but as, you know, as a teen. And then to become friends with the legendary, iconic fashion designers, it's a blessing.
Thank you.
And you always have good, like, good conversation. You always have a good word.
Thank you.
So I'll share really quick a conversation that we had. So we're in London and we're talking about Hollywood Unlocked. And I think you gave me a compliment. You were just talking about the journey and how we've been going and, you know, just growing. And it just, I don't know, it feels good to know that people recognize the hard work that other people are putting in. Because, you know, all of us that started somewhere, whether it's you in fashion or me in media, we all start somewhere. And, you never know along the way if people acknowledge the work that you do. So I just wanted to say thank you.
No, I appreciate that. You know, it takes real one to recognize another real one. And, you know, we all go through the struggle for success. And it's good to big up each other at the same time.
Absolutely. Okay, so now, you know, fashion, everybody's paying attention to fashion, I think, more than ever now. And I don't know why that is. But you've seen the trends of fashion change over the years. Where do you think we are in the world of fashion as it relates to the urban influence in fashion today?
Yeah, I think the urban influence is getting stronger and stronger. You know, when we first started back in the days, there was no urban influence at all. You know, we were wearing Sassoon, Jordache, mm-hmm. Calvin Klein, Champs the Baron, Campus, Izod, things like that. And me and my friends used to go shopping, and I remember they used to look at us like we're trying to steal something in the stores. So, you know, we used to get pissed off about that. And at the same time, the fit of the clothing wasn't the way that we wanted it to be. So I learned something very young in life, that as opposed to complaining about things, go out there and make something happen. Mm-hmm. That's what influenced me to start doing our own clothing and show that you can come from the streets and make your own clothing and supply stuff for your own people, as opposed to waiting on another man to dress you.
So you were 16 when you started designing clothes, or when you started the Carl, not the Carl Kanai brand, but when you started just getting into design, you were 16?
Yeah, actually, you know, I got into the fashion because my family's from Costa Rica and Panama. My dad's Panamanian. He used to have a certain way he wanted his clothes made. So he used to get his clothes made by a tailor. So as a young kid, I used to go with him to Delancey Street to buy his fabrics and go back to Brooklyn to his tailor. And his tailor used to make his clothing. So I kind of saw the process of how you can make clothing without technically knowing how to sew. So when we moved to the inner city in Brooklyn, my mom and my dad split up. We moved to East New York, and it was a big project with 50 buildings, 20 stories for each building. So it was a lot of kids in the project. So my first day out, all the kids hung out in the shopping center. I remember going out there, and this is my first day to meet all the kids. So I went out there and I had some sneakers on. I had my little outfit. I thought I was fresh. So the first time I went out there, this dude said, "Yo, shorty, man, what kind of sneakers you got on?" I said, "Man, these are Skips." He said, "Man, them shits come from the grocery stores. Get out of here with that crap, man." So I was like, I felt so embarrassed. I went home crying to my mom. I was like, "Mom, man, these kids out here is ruthless. They're laughing at my clothes. I need some money to go buy some clothing." You know, my family's from the islands. They was like, she's like, "Boy, you better go out there and find yourself a job."
Oh, yes. My father said the same thing. You got champagne taste on a beer income, sweetheart. You better go. I was 11.
Yeah. You know the feeling.
He was serious.
Yeah, you know
yes,
the feeling.
Yes, I do.
So what did I do at that point? I went out and I found a job. At 12 mm-hmm. years old, I found me a newspaper route. Mm-hmm. I used to get up at 5:30 in the morning to deliver newspapers so I could get some money. Because I had to hang out with these kids, but I could not go out there getting dissed.
Mm-hmm. So did you realize when you had the paper route, though, that you weren't just doing it for money, but you were also learning, like, hard work ethic, being consistent, like, and
you
just
don't
working
think,
hard.
You don't know that at that time. You're just like, I'm just trying to get some gear.
I had
gear.
A newspaper route, wrapping that shit up and putting them rubber bands on and then throwing it.
Now that I look back at it, it was definitely setting the tone for who I am today. Because right mm-hmm. now I can't sleep. I still get up at 5 o'clock every morning, mm-hmm. no matter what time I go to bed. Mm. It's set in from back then. Mm.
I think this was the first recorded incident of, "What are those, kids? What are those?"
What, newspaper?
With the Skips. Nah, the Skips that he had on. He was getting roasted.
I was getting, man.
What year was this?
This is like, this is like 82, 83.
Yeah, definitely. You were getting roasted.
I was getting done. And I didn't realize my mother's actually getting my sneakers from the frozen food department in the grocery store.
No way. They weren't
sneakers.
Joking.
No, they used to sell sneakers in the grocery store.
He wasn't joking about grocery store
straight
sneakers.
Up. And that's where he used to get them from.
So, you know, I was thinking the other day, I was with a friend of mine. He's he's a video director for Bryson Tiller. They're best friends. They have a clothing line that they've just started. I can't remember the name of the clothing line. But anyway, he was talking to me about the journey that he's been on for the last 4 years, discovering where he wants to go, high end, you know, other stuff that he's doing now.
Mm-hmm. Made to wear.
Made to wear. Yeah. Thank you. You know, fashion. Let me tell you what an expert does. An expert surrounds themselves with people who are experts in other shit. I'm the mm-hmm. expert of knowing people. Mm-hmm. I ain't the expert of nothing else. Mm-hmm. But I was talking to him, and as I was listening to his own self-discovery on the journey of getting there, and him and the fear of, he's only 24, he's been doing this for 4 years, but mm-hmm. he's like, "I don't want to be 34 looking back and never have done it successfully."
Right.
You never studied design, you never studied, you weren't a tailor, mm-hmm. but then you became an iconic fashion brand in mm-hmm. that not only just became a part of the culture, but really was driving the culture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How does that happen? Because there are people like Elijah who are sitting out there that are like, I want to get into fashion, but they see the Supremes and they see the Louis Vuittons and they feel very overwhelmed with the industry that's already saturated.
Yeah.
How did you, not having that background, do that?
I think you just said something really key right there. Like, a lot of people coming out now, you feel overwhelmed by all these competitors out there. You know, when you're young and you're from the inner city, you have no fear. You have no fear of failure. And there wasn't any blueprint for how we make this thing happen. There wasn't someone before me who did it so we could say, I want to be like this guy. I just started making custom-made clothing for myself. And as I wore it in the projects around those same dudes, back, you got to take it back in the late 80s. In the 80s going into the 90s, everybody was selling drugs back then. Mm-hmm. Drug money was all over the streets. Mm-hmm. You know, you go uptown, it was almost like legal to sell drugs. People just stand up online buying crack and things like that. So getting money wasn't a problem. So as I started wearing my outfits, all these drug dealers was coming to me, yo, Shorty, I want one of those outfits. Where'd you get that from? Where'd you get it from? As opposed to telling them, I was like, yo, I'll make you one. Mm-hmm. The dudes would actually give me cash. Mm-hmm. And I used to go back to my tailor and do the process and make the suits for them. One key day, though, we were sitting in the projects, and this guy walked by, Joe. He had one of my suits on. I was sitting with some girls. I was bragging. I was like, yo, I made that outfit for him. They's like, no, you didn't. They's like, yes, I did. They said, tell him, come over here. He comes over. She's like, who made that jacket for you? He's like, Carl made it. Why, what's up? She's like, can I see your jacket? She starts looking at it, and she goes, if Carl made it, how come his name ain't on it then? Mm-hmm. And that's when it hit me. Because back then, I wasn't branding. I didn't even have a name. I was just making clothes with no label in it, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. So that's, when she said that, I'm like, damn, I should start putting my name in the clothing. Mm-hmm. And that's literally how it all started.
Yeah, so our researcher told us go ahead.
No, go ahead, because I was about to say the same thing. I already know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Our researcher told us about that your last name is not Kanai, it's Williams. But before that, it was Casanova. I mean, how could you change Carl Casanova? I mean, that name slick. Is so that's fabulous. Smooth, and it's your government. But like, where did Kanai come from?
And let's not mention that that's like Superman finding out the nigga's name is Clark. Like, you're supposed to be Superman.
Carl Casanova. That's smooth.
Well, here's the deal. My father, when we came to the United States, my father wanted to Americanize the family. So he changed our last name to an American last name, Williams. And he only spoke English in the household. So he wanted us to learn American culture and English. So after she made that comment to me, I went back home and I was trying to come up with my line of jeans. I was like, Carl Williams jeans.
Yeah, no.
Just didn't have that. It didn't give me that John and Karen, Giorgio Armani, Gianni Versace. Didn't have that ring to it. Mm-hmm. Can I was a question of self-doubt I used to ask myself all the time. Can I be successful? Can I come from the inner city? Can I be black and build a brand that's gonna be international? Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the answers to that. So I like to doodle a lot on a piece of paper. Anytime I get a pen in my hand, I like to keep writing on a piece of paper. I used to sit at my house in the projects and listen to In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins with the lights on.
Love that song.
For some strange reason, I used to do every night and thinking about this brand and think about this name. And Can I was, I used to write it on a piece of paper for some strange reason. One day I just looked at Carl, Can I? And I asked five of my friends, hey, man, there's this designer called Carl Kanai that makes some dope stuff. You guys heard about him? Of course, they all said no because it didn't exist. Mm-hmm. But I said, what do you guys think of that name? I said, your name's kind of dope. Mm-hmm. So I asked five of my friends who never liked anything, and they all said they liked the name. I was like, all right, cool. That's going to be my name from now on. And that's when I did it. And when I became a citizen in 1998, because I failed the test twice.
The naturalization test?
Yeah, I failed it twice. Mm-hmm. When I passed the test, the lady, it was a little small Russian lady. She's like, oh, congratulations, you passed. She says, do you want to change your name? So I already had Carl Kanai going at the time. And I was wondering, why would she ask me that? Because I knew she didn't know who I was. Mm-hmm. She says, and I says, why did you ask me that? She says, oh, no, because we ask everyone from foreign countries. Sometimes people have really long last names. They want to condense it. She said, so I said, I could change my name to whatever I want it to be. She says, whatever you want it to be, you could change your name right now. It'll tie right into your social security number. And I says, all right. Carl Kanai, that's what it is. So now, tell your man, it's Carl Kanai legit now, for sure.
Okay, yeah. All right, dope.
So back in the day, your hustle included, you talked about the whole crack era. You were selling clothes out your car.
Yeah.
The conversation I was having the other day again with Elijah was, he's a creative, and you know, us super creatives, you know, you're a comic actor, you're a fashion designer. I don't know what the fuck I am at this point, but we're creative people, like in media, we're creating content, we're creating. Sometimes you lack execution, or we lack execution because we're so busy creating. He, I think, suffers from that. He's a creative who is now having to figure out the execution part of it. How important How important is the hustle part of getting your brand off the line, especially in an environment like fashion that is so saturated?
It's all hustle. Basically, man, we just took the street hustle of how we used to hustle on the streets and put it into the fashion world. And I tell kids from the inner city all the time, we're so blessed to come from the inner city. If what a kid goes through the inner city, kids that grew up in the suburbs will never experience that. Mm-hmm. You get war wounds, you get scratches on you, you get to feel the integrity of the streets. And it's such a powerful thing. It's something that school will never teach you, only mm-hmm. life experience, especially when you learn at a young age. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So we just took that, and failure wasn't no option for us. We were going to make it no matter what. So when we came to California, we had $1,000 in a pocket full of dreams, but we were not going back to New York unless we were successful.
And so how did you, so we just recently had Jennifer Lewis in here, and she played Tupac's mom in Poetic Justice. And you had a relationship with Tupac. How did that relationship come about? And I found it interesting how you got him involved with your brand and how he became such an influential part of it.
Absolutely. Tupac now, that was such a different artist for us to work with. He used to wear my clothing all the time. And I remember when I seen that video with him and MC Bree, I Gotta Get Mines, and they both had on Carl Kanai in the video, and we got so much reaction from that video coming out. And I wanted to meet Tupac really
bad.
When
you say reaction, what do you mean?
Retailers.
People were asking for it.
Stores started, because we ran Detroit, Chicago, New York. That showed you the power of hip-hop. Mm-hmm. Retailers was basing it on what they saw on TV. And keep in mind, this is the era where there was no Facebook, no Twitter, no Instagram, mm-hmm. no cell phone. There was no internet.
So beepers, though. We had beepers.
And remember, the original beepers didn't even have a number. It just had, you just get a beep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so you just get a beep.
How old are you again, man?
So, taking you way back then. So, my point was, so with Tupac, after he wore it in that video, I had to meet him. So, my friend set it up, and I met him at the Hotel Nico, which is now the SLS on mm-hmm. La Cienega. Mm-hmm. So, I go to his room. Knock on the door, and he says, come in. We go in, and he's sitting at a table, and he's writing a script to a movie, and he's smoking blunt after blunt and having a very intelligent conversation with us about black culture and hip-hop, but he never looked at me. And I was like...
Never
made eye contact. But he's talking to me like normal, and this is the first time we met.
And, so I'm like, and he knows it's you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now we're cool. But he was just into what he was multitasking. He's writing a script and talking to me, doing smoking weed, doing everything at one time. So I'm trying to get a read on him to like ask him the initial question I wanted to ask him. So finally room service came to the room, and I remember they knocked on the door, and the guy put a towel over his mouth because there was so much smoke in the room, and he delivered the food, and Tupac was sitting there, and I was like, yo, Pac. I was like, how much would you charge me to do an ad? And the room just got quiet. He didn't say nothing. I was like, damn, I fucked up.
Because there was no influencer marketing back then. There was no such thing as an influencer marketing campaign.
Yeah. It was none of that. What we had was, back then we had Source Magazine.
Just the culture.
Ride On and Word Up.
Yeah.
And the room stayed quiet. Finally, he's like, yo, man, you black. I don't charge my people for nothing. Mm. And the man kept his word. 2 weeks later, he was in New York and he did the photo shoot. Actually, he said, no, I want one thing. I was like, oh, boy, here we go. How much millions do you want, Tupac? He's like, yo, I want you to put Thug Life in some of the ads with me. I'm like, that's it? He's like, that's it. And that's after that kind of like broke the ice in the conversation. Then he's like, yo, I got this idea. I want to be on a toilet taking a shit with your drawers on. I want to be on top of a basketball rim with your clothes on, sitting on rim. So that was all. Tupac was actually directing the whole shoot.
Creative director.
The whole shoot. Yeah. It was all his concept. Everything we wanted to do. And check this out. Even when we did all of that, he didn't even want the clothes for free.
Wow.
He wanted to pay for the clothes.
Really?
Wow. That's so, how real he was.
So things have changed because it's very different now. And So Puffy yesterday, love Puffy. Let me just get that out first before y'all start tagging him and saying I'm talking shit about him. Puffy posted something yesterday, and we had had this conversation about black excellence when we were in London. And he had posted all of the current heads of labels and whatever, and he said we need to push these people to the top. And I said, I'm not pushing a motherfucker to the top just because they're black. There has to be reciprocity. We have to lift each other up. And mm-hmm. and now I feel like it's less about what you just described with you and Tupac and more about I just gotta get there. No, we can all get there. We drive the culture. We're the culture. Mm-hmm. And so I had that reaction. But like, what, where do you think the change has happened from that experience with you and Tupac and how that impacted your brand and the culture versus what we experience now?
I think with the whole social media thing, it kind of screwed people up somewhat, like living a different false sense of reality. So everybody's trying to get their likes up. It's about me, 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 me. It's not about us together. Mm-hmm. Everybody's worried about their page and what they get out of it and the content. There's a lot of competition. It's very hard, I think, for a kid to grow up nowadays too. Well, competition with social media. So I think the whole climate has changed right now, and people could see whether you're successful or not very quickly. Back in the days, you didn't know how successful somebody was unless you saw them out on the streets or whatever like that. So I think the mentality has changed somewhat, and it's a lot easier for somebody to get famous and popular. So it's like every man for himself type of mentality now.
So you're really successful online. You create a lot of skits, Tonio skits. You create, but people know you as being like one of the biggest, or not the biggest, content creator, and you're very collaborative. Why do you think nowadays it's very hard to collaborate with a lot of people?
What I've experienced is a lot of people that have a large following, they grow so fast. The fame comes to them, or the sense of whatever fame is, because it's now so subjective. And they think they made it somewhere, and they lose that humbleness. So now I made it. You know, I don't got to film with this person. I got to film with that person. And when I moved to LA, my only thing that I stuck to was I would always collaborate with whoever that was creative. I didn't care how many followers you have. I didn't care where you came from. If you're creative, let's do something. Mm-hmm. By doing that, I was able to mix in with a large crowd of people I've never even met that accepted me. But along the way, I met a lot of those people where they felt they were too good. You know, and by too good, meaning, you know, they have a larger follower. But social media, the way I look at it now, it's the new Hollywood, if you may. Because back then it was all about, you know, your status, who do you associate with, you know, how much money you have or whatever it is. But now it's just how many followers you have, who do you film with?
Well, I could tell you, listen, the video with Biggie, One More Chance, I can remember that motherfucker like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. I don't remember a lot of the Vines, honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't remember that shit. And the thing I think for me, you know, having, you know, been friends with Queen Latifah for 25 years and seeing the evolution of a rapper, actress, fucking, you know, Oscar nominated actress, you know, producer, director. I mean, not director, producer. I've seen the evolution of that career, you know, and I think where you're diverse is you definitely do a lot more outside of just content creating on Instagram and the fact that you are collaborative. But I'm wondering, like, where do we lose the sense of fostering collaboration and like making it together and growing together? Where did that, is it just the social media craze, you think?
I think so. I think it's like every man for themselves. I think that, you know, as people build up their followers, it's like, I'm not going to do nothing for you because I'm not going to help you get my followers on your page, things of that nature. So it's like every man for themselves. But I do feel eventually it's going to get back to the realness again, because this is not going to last forever.
Yeah, people, I just want to add on to that idea. It's a different world right now. Mm-hmm. Information, the information we get now in an hour is so much faster. There's so much data going on. We're growing at a faster speed. We're moving so fast. I can draw this comparison to, remember the housing market when everybody was able to get a house and everything was moving so fast and that bubble burst. I feel like in social media, everything's moving so fast that something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's just too much, too many people doing the exact same thing. Like something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Even in the music industry, name one rapper that's new out right now. That's not Cardi B, but a rapper that doesn't have a face tat. It's crazy right now.
It's true.
I wish that face tat. Well, let me tell
you, but you know, I guess where I can tell you one example in tying to fashion where kind of there was a backlash was when Gucci tried to take Dapper Dan's swag. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's cultural vultures everywhere in the industry. I ran into Iggy Azalea at Coachella, and I said, hey, she said, hey, I said, when you coming on my show? She said, well, what you gonna ask me? I said, oh, I'm not gonna ask you nothing. Because she gets accused of being a cultural vulture, which I love Iggy Azalea, by the way. Mm-hmm. What did you think of that when you saw that happen with Gucci? And now they're collaborating, like, apparently. Yeah. But what did you think about that?
I think, you know, just designers like Gucci's and Louis Vuitton, and they're I'm not gonna say opportunists, but I would say that they do things in the moment, meaning that streetwear culture is big right now, so they need to find a way to be part of that. But my thing is, what happens when it ain't the hot thing anymore? They're gonna go back to using all the white models and using all the white runway shows and things like that and forget about us again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got to be very mindful of that. Although we're excited that, you know, Virgil is there, I like the idea of us building our own brands for our own selves. You know what I mean?
Because Off-White was really successful.
Yeah.
And so now Virgil Abloh is now the men's designer for Louis. What do you think? Do you think that collaboration is really that's more than just tapping into the culture?
Absolutely. Yeah. Come on, I mean, it's right there written in
your
face.
They had the success with Supreme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just right there written in your face. I mean, just streetwear culture. And the thing about it now, when we first started, urban fashion was all black. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, our clothes weren't even appealing to other markets. Mm-hmm. Now, I feel other cultures are even bigger.
They wanted even more.
They even wanted more than us. Like, right now, our biggest markets is Germany, Switzerland, Amsterdam. Who would think? Mm-hmm. You know, we have 10 stores in Japan right now. So we have a bunch of foreigners wearing our clothing and building up our culture. So things have definitely changed a lot. But I think it's more important that we start to have our own ownership for our own culture, because otherwise then we just big them up and they could just leave us alone in the past.
How are you able to avoid, you know, that kind of counterfeiting thing that big labels try to do and, you know, try and absorb smaller brands by, you know, basically aping their whole, you know, look and design and then taking it for themselves? How were you able to, like, avoid that from happening?
It was very difficult for us back in the days. You know, we had our Kanai signature, and they were just bootlegging that thing left and right all over the place. And it got to the point where retailers couldn't even sell my stuff anymore because they couldn't define what was real and what was fake because the signature looked the same. Mm-hmm. That's when I came up with the metal plate. Mm-hmm. I always think in this business, there's always an answer once you dig deep. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't let... My mother always say, you know, one monkey don't stop the show. You always got to think about the next level. So we always try to keep it moving and be fast paced and never settling for less. So I think just being more forthright thinking and thinking more future will help separate you from a lot of other designers that's out there.
So the metal plate came about to prevent people from stealing
from the counterfeiting. Because the embroidery was a lot easier for them just to embroider and make a fake Carl Kanai shirt. But for them to go through the process of ordering a leather patch and a metal plate, it got a little bit more difficult for them to do. So I was hoping by me doing that, they'll move on to another brand, leave me alone. Mm. So it worked for a while.
Did you actually trademark that kind of, that logo and label design?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so that they couldn't replicate that.
They couldn't replicate it. But if you see now, there's still designers today who's trying to imitate our look. Mm-hmm. They're using their logo on it, but people still know what's real or not.
Did that change the price of the clothing?
It did. It did raise the price of the clothing somewhat. Yeah, it did raise the clothing, but we had to do what we had to do because otherwise then your brand could be one of those brands where you were here today and gone tomorrow. You got to keep setting the tone for what the culture is. And you know, with hip hop, as you remember in the 90s, hip hop was about how much money you got and flossing and things like that. So your clothing kind of had to speak to that customer also. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so I was going to say, so in 1996, you became one of the richest, one of the most, 100 most richest, I want to say, is it not African-Americans, right? Mm-hmm. African-Americans in 1996. Yeah. So how did you spend your money? Did you invest? Did you go on strip clubs like Floyd Mayweather? Like, what did you do with all that money? Like, you're sitting here with all this money. What do you do with it?
Man, I don't do strip clubs. We travel a lot. We had apartments in Japan and in Germany. We spent a lot of time over there. We felt like we had to build an international market for this brand to really be successful. We knew that the United States market is kind of fickle, especially when all these other urban brands start jumping on the scene. Buyers are buying what was on the latest video. You know, you had Rockaway, Sean John, Fat Farm, you know, all these brands doing similar looks. So if a kid goes in the store, he has $100, which brand is he gonna buy? A lot of times he buys what he saw on TV last week, and they were dominating the videos at that point. So we had to make some transitions at that point to stay real in the business.
So do you see yourself collaborating with who are you interested in collaborating with now?
Yeah, you know, as why we were in Manchester, you know, we're about to do a collaboration, Pretty Little Thing, comes out next month.
I saw it, by the way. It looks really good.
Yeah, it's
menswear?
No, it's women's.
It's women's wear.
It's a women's line. Okay. We're bringing back the whole 90s Aaliyah vibe for the culture type vibe, bringing back the colors and that whole nostalgia look. And I think it's a really cool collaboration because, you know, online business is where it's at right now. Mm-hmm. Carl Kanai Certified Street, Pretty Little Thing has their customer base, which is really a crossover type of base. I think the combination of the two is going to be good. So we do a collaboration if we think it fits our brand. It's going to help expand our appeal for Carl Kanai and bring it back to the forefront.
Mm. And it's ultra fast fashion, which means a lot of people wearing the clothing, which means a lot more money.
Absolutely.
So does what we wear in the U.S. drive what people buy around the world?
Absolutely, 100%. People want what's happening in U.S. culture, hands down. If it ain't happening here, it's very difficult for it to happen elsewhere. We've been blessed that even when our brand wasn't popping in the United States, say in the 2000 era for like a good 8-year span, what legitimized Carl Kanai to everybody was all the icons that wore my clothing. Mm-hmm. And people know these weren't no paid endorsements. I mean, we could go down the list. We could go from Dr. Dre, Snoop, Nas, Biggie, Michael Jackson, Aaliyah, Tupac.
But you got Biggie. Pictures of Michael Jackson and Carl Kanai?
Yeah.
Oh, I would wear that shit on my back. Everywhere yeah. I go, I would just do that.
Yeah. We've been blessed to have all these famous, iconic Old Dirty Bastard. I mean, I could line. We got Aaliyah, Tupac, Biggie, Old Dirty Bastard. All icons are not here anymore, and they all wore Carl Kanai, and they wore it because it was part of the culture, and they wore it because it was real, and they wanted to be part of it.
Right. There's a series on USA Networks right now, the murders of Notorious B.I.G. and Tupac. Yeah. And am I wrong, but did I see Carl Kanai? So did they approach you?
Yeah.
The set designers.
Yeah,
set designers, they approached you and we were like, we need authentic.
Absolutely. Because they know like that was what they wore. How can they show that movie without showing what they actually wore? Mm-hmm. Just like even with All Eyes on Me, we had like 6 different scenes in there with the Tupac character mm-hmm. wearing Carl Kanai because that's all he wore. It mm-hmm. wouldn't be legit if he wasn't wearing the brand.
Over the years, decades that your brand has been in existence, have you basically kind of created like, what would you call that? What you'd like put in a museum?
Did I save a lot of my iconic pieces?
Exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
I do. I do have a vault.
Okay, yes.
And you know what's funny about that? Mm. Is like, back in 2014-15, Migos, Quavo came to me mm-hmm. and he DM'd me.
Yeah.
He's like, yo, we want some of that vintage stuff that Biggie and Pac wore.
Yeah.
I was like, you want the old stuff?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, no, we want what they wore is what we want. And I'm thinking to myself, damn, that's cheating. I already did that already. Mm-hmm. That's too easy. That's easy money right there. So I went back into as he inspired me to go back into the bowl mm-hmm. and go do that. And that's why I love Quavo. He's such a visionary. Mm-hmm. You know, they were one of the first groups from this new young generation culture yeah. who wanted to get behind rocking Carl Kanai. And again, he didn't ask for no money. He just That's wanted dope. To rock it for the culture.
Right.
And even when they came out with their latest album, he wore it one day, and the next day he had Takeoff wear it. And they just did it out of love, and I thought that was real.
Well, you know, it's interesting. But again, I mean, it also validates them. You know, the legends wore it, you know. So it's a reciprocal, and that goes back to what I was saying earlier. It has to be a reciprocal relationship because, you know, when Jennifer Lewis was here, she talked about we're all one. And we all can exist or coexist and become whatever our fullest potential if we're not lifting each other up. And we were just at Coachella this weekend and saw the Migos. They are my favorite of this generation, not only because of their songs, their song choices and all that, but just
they're respectful when it comes to where, you know, who's inspired them,
absolutely.
You know, the history of, you know, where they're at the forefront of hip hop now, but who were their forebears?
Exactly.
They're respectful, you know, in comparison to, you know, their counterparts who are like, you know, fuck Tupac.
So how was it back in the day with you, Russell, the people who owned, you know, FUBU? Damon John. Were you all friends
Carl, yeah.
or were you all like frenemies?
No, I mean, when we first started, the guys from FUBU used to come up to my booth, the Magic Show, and before they got on, asked me for advice. I used to sit out there, the young black brothers from Queens, I used to give them advice on what they should do and what I thought they should do. And they took that and they was able to run their own company and become successful. And Russell, the same thing. Russell used to call me up and ask me to go to dinner and picking my brains about the garment industry and things like that. And so a lot of these guys, they came to me for advice and I gave it up because it was nothing to me. I would much rather see another black man get on as opposed to other designers that's going to steal from the culture. Mm.
So have you ever written a book about your life?
No, it's in the process though now. I feel like now we're going on 30 years coming up next year. So it's time to kind of tell a story. You know, I wish the story could have been everything was squeaky clean and great the whole 30 years, but it hasn't been. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been through our ups and downs and trials and tribulations, and welcome to the garment business.
Have you ever thought of quitting?
Never.
Never?
Ever. This won't happen.
Ever.
I'll die before I quit.
Did you ever have a plan B?
No. There's no plan B. This is gonna happen. Mm. I didn't want to do nothing else but fashion, and this is my calling, and I know that's why I'm here.
So when Michael Jackson wears your clothes, do you just call your friends and be like, y'all can't fuck with me? Like, what do you say?
You know what's funny? Like, when these artists wore the clothes, everything just happens to me in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if I even embrace each moment. I think if I really just sit back and think about everything that's happened, everybody wore my clothing, I'd be a little bit overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. I just accept each moment and go to the next day to keep this machine going. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't look back.
You don't stop to smell your own roses.
Not really, because like, there's so much in this business you got to do to make this thing successful. You don't have time for that. You got to always look for the next positive moment to keep the momentum going, which I think is important.
Well, have you allowed yourself to enjoy the journey?
I enjoy a journey every day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My journey is enjoyed when I see an artist wear my clothing. Like when Ariana Grande wore my bubble coat through the whole video with her and Future every day. Like, that makes the journey and the cycle complete for me. Like, mm-hmm. I know we're doing the right thing. And I know we have so much more work to do. Ralph Lauren been around since 1967, before I was born, and he's still growing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So we have a lot to do. Brands don't, you just don't accomplish all your goals and brands in 1 to 5 years. You gotta go this thing for decades. So we're going on 3 decades. I think we need about six more decades to go.
Who put Ariana Grande onto Carl Kanai? Like, how did that happen?
A stylist.
Okay.
Her stylist, his name is Tim. Mm-hmm. I felt like, you know, Ariana Grande probably wanted a street appeal. Mm-hmm. And he came, he did a pull, and he saw one of these bubble coats that we did back in 1995. He's like, mm-hmm. I want this. I'm like, that jacket is big.
Yeah.
It's a big one. He said, no, that's how she wore it. If you see how she's wearing it, she's wearing it like an overcoat in the whole video. Mm-hmm. She made that look happen. You know what I mean? She made
Isn't
it cool.
Isn't she wearing that in the mobile phone commercial? Was it a Verizon commercial or it's something like that? Was she standing on the side of the road? I'm positive that it's your coat she's wearing in that.
Quite possible. Yeah. She loves the jacket. Yeah. And that was really made. And she opened us up to a whole different market as well.
So that's what I was going to ask you. Now, was the jacket for sale when she wore that?
It was for sale soon after that. After she wore it, we had to hurry up and get the jacket.
Because that's what I was going to say. Did you see a demand for it?
Yeah, the jackets are very expensive, though. The jackets are $350 a pop. Mm-hmm. It's sort of expensive. Anyway, but we saw a lot of reaction for it. We sold them on a website. Then we started sending up pre-orders where people had to pre-order and prepay for the jacket so we knew how many to go make. Mm-hmm. So she helped open it up to a lot of people who probably, some people knew about the brand, but she made it more awareness again real quick.
Okay, so what's next for you? Like, you've had all this success over all the decades, you're in all these countries, you've had the icons wearing, like, what's next?
What's next is that there's a lot of people in this world who don't know my name yet. And I heard from a close friend of mine who's very, very smart that there's life on Mars. So, which means that we need to set up distribution on Mars. So that's our next plan. We're working on that right now.
Okay. I have a question, though. Costa Rica. Who in your family is Latino?
My whole family's Latino. Everybody. Oh, okay. Everybody in my family.
We need to point that out. Latino?
Yeah, everybody in my family speaks fluent Spanish except for me and my sister, thanks to my dad. He decided not. Cause I was speaking Spanish before we came to the States. I was 3 years old. My dad decided no more Spanish for you guys. And so everybody in my family is Spanish.
We just had Amara Negra on here last week, and she was telling, I mean, we all came from probably the same place, but we, I guess, got dropped off different places. Mm-hmm. I'm from Stockton, so I don't know. No, but I appreciate you coming on the show, and I want, you know, of course, everybody who, and you say people don't know your name. People know Carl Kanai.
Yeah. Everybody.
I knew how to spell your shit before I knew how to spell my own name. But no, I appreciate you, you know, being humble and always being accessible to me and just showing us the love, and it's a pleasure, you know, having you on here. And, you know, we want to continue to work together somehow.
And I'm definitely looking forward to that Pretty Little Things collaboration.
Oh, that's really nice.
It's going to be hot. I'm looking forward to that. And we definitely got to spread the culture worldwide for sure.
And I'm an influencer, so, you know, if you want to wear your clothes, you can work something out.
Listen, actually, Tonio and I are, he's already been on Wildin' Out on MTV. I just did my first season with him, and that's how I got my job. I interviewed Nick here, was like, nigga need a job.
You know, so that's how I started.
Asking you shall receive.
There you go.
All right, thank you, Carl. We're out. So we are going to just jump right into hot topics the way Tristan Thompson is jumping into all this pussy. What is happening?
I don't know.
I do know.
Oh, well.
That was sexual assault. You saw that white girl.
Oh, for fuck's
sake.
That
was sexual assault. She took him and dragged his face into her breasts.
Okay.
Ladies and
hashtag
gentlemen.
Hashtag me too.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you hear the sound of my voice and you are moved by it, you have heard the show before, and I have said one thing. niggas ain't shit. And there's no way of taking a shot. I'm not taking a shot against any of my brothers. No, no, not hating on you. But you know, men love new pussy. Mm-hmm. That is a fact.
Right.
So I'm not surprised by Tristan Thompson. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised they named the baby True.
Yeah.
Because the only thing true is that nigga about to get destroyed. You fucked with the Kardashian clan. You know, Bruce turned into Brunhilde.
Yeah.
Lamar almost died with the hoes at the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Chris Humphries at Coachella. He looked lonely. Niggas don't survive the Kardashians. So anyway, do you want to sum up what's going on with Tristan Thompson and Khloé since we just jumped right in it?
Okay. Well, everybody was wondering whether or not Khloé was going to end the relationship because, you know, most people would assume just how much cheating it seemed like he was doing that she would end things. And she seemed to defiantly stand by her man. She was like, no, this relationship's not over. And she kind of alluded to the fact she felt like he might have been set up. All kinds of really interesting things. But it's looking like that's not necessarily true.
Okay, so
they're icing him out.
So video surfaced, for those of you, if you've been living under a rock, Khloe Kardashian, she struggled getting pregnant by Lamar Odom when she was married to him.
Mm-hmm.
Later revealed that she was avoiding that because, you know, he was on drugs and going through their own internal challenges. But then she ends up getting pregnant by Tristan Thompson, who now has become the subject of a lot of videos that have surfaced with him and a bunch of women whom you think he's been sexually targeted.
Well, his nickname is Third Trimester Thompson. No.
Right. So let's a little backstory. He had a baby mama who was pregnant. Mm-hmm. At 8 or 9 months. He left her for Khloe Kardashian because everybody said he was clout chasing and wanted to get famous.
Mm-hmm.
Khloe took him in, became his girl, then became his baby mama. And so now he's cheating on her. Mm-hmm. So the question I had on Instagram was, who the fuck fault is it? Hers or his? Somebody has to have some karma here in this.
Right. Well, that's what people are saying, is that karma is a bitch and that should have been the kid's name. because, you know, he starts cheating right around the same time that he was cheating on the last baby mama. I mean, that's why he's got the nickname Third Trimester Thompson.
You women need to stop thinking you can change a man. You never will.
Who is this? You do not lump me into that shit.
Are we ignoring the fact that they are coming back with a new season of?
Yeah.
Okay. It's
really difficult to believe that none of this is staged in some form or fashion. You know, if cheating did take place, when did it exactly happen? Because she just gave birth.
I'm going to defend Kris Jenner because as angelic as she is, she's always thrown into the middle. This lady slept with a man who had more, what y'all got, estrogen in her system than she did. Mm-hmm. And she endured that limp dick nigga for I don't know how long while he played and paraded around in her dresses. And then she said, you know, what is she supposed to do? Have a nervous breakdown and go cry? No, she said, you know what? We're going to turn this into a check. I don't think she creates this stuff. I don't think Khloe Kardashian sat and conspired to have her man. And, you know, he fucking him too, because I got the porno, but I ain't going to put it out, but I got it.
Mm. Well, I don't think that there was a conspiracy like, hey, you know, setting him up to go sleep with this chick and this chick and this chick. I think he's just doing what the hell he wanted to do, you know?
Mm. Well, do you think she should have stayed?
Rich, young, dumb, full of cum.
Do you think she should have stayed?
Well, it doesn't look like she's going to. I don't know what she's doing.
Would you have stayed?
No.
So you would have left and been a single mother.
But it happened 4 months ago.
Huh?
It happened like 4 months ago.
But well, she was pregnant.
No. The footage of him walking into the Four Seasons Hotel in New York, that was recent.
Yeah, dude's walking to the Four Seasons Hotel
at 4 o'clock in the morning with this chick with a really enhanced ass. I'm sorry, girl.
What time zone this happened at?
It was in New York.
In New York.
Yeah.
At 4 o'clock in the morning, that means it's 1 o'clock in L.A.
So Oh, my God.
And
she was seen leaving with a Louis Vuitton tote with some extra clothing in it.
Tonio is from the Niggas Ain't Shit fraternity. So, of course, he going to have an explanation. Listen, ladies, y'all are the most intuitive creatures on the face of the fucking planet. Mm-hmm. But y'all still turn your eye and say, my nigga ain't doing that.
I mean, when people were talking about her leaving, people were like, well, Jay-Z admitted to cheating on Beyonce. She didn't leave.
Beyonce dropped a hit record.
Yes, she did.
She probably Solange whooped his ass.
Yes, she did.
Then he dropped a hit record that she creative directed.
Okay.
And then now they're going on a tour together. So she said, nigga, either I destroy you and you go back up there to Brooklyn where you came from in that little damn shack, or we're going to go get this bag. Beyonce's about her business.
Think about it. Yep. Let's just say they got divorced, Jay-Z and Beyonce. Who could Beyonce be with? Like, who's... Honestly, I'm going to say this is going to sound very strange, so just give me a lot of leeway. But who would be good enough to be with Beyonce to where it would make as much sense as it does with her being with Jay-Z? Who?
Barack Obama.
Well, no, we can't have that because we love Auntie Michelle. So, no, we love them together.
DJ Jazzy Jeff.
You're funny.
Lil Uzi. Boom gang. Whole lot of gang shit.
Boom gang.
Let me see.
Whole lot of B shit.
You know who I would love to see her with if she wasn't with Jay-Z?
Who?
Rihanna.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
No, for real. Could you imagine? Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
No.
Missy Elliott.
Let's take a moment to just visualize that.
No. No, we're not doing
Rihanna
that.
Rihanna would definitely be the one fucking her with a dildo, for sure. Beyonce. I can't even... I've tried to picture Beyonce getting fucked. I can't even imagine that angelic, mystical creature, even though she's popped out three kids, allegedly, having sex.
Just watch the video Drunk in Love. That's how it goes down.
I love her.
And you know what? By the way, people are going to say, I don't know, whatever. It is hands down my favorite song by her, Drunk in Love. It is my favorite song by her.
Okay, what else is going on in the world?
I'm sorry.
Niggas is getting Pulitzer Prizes.
Yes, so Kendrick Lamar's album, Damn, has won a Pulitzer Prize for music, which is amazing because that album was so, like, it just, like, socked you in the face. It was so dope.
Never heard it.
You're such a liar.
No, never.
Yes, you, Loyalty with Rihanna.
How's that go?
Somebody sing it.
Sing it.
Somebody sing it. You've heard that.
If it's been on the radio, I've heard it.
Yeah.
Dun-dun.
Yeah, I've not heard the album.
Yes, you have, and you've heard Humble. And you've heard Damn. DNA, video that he did with Don Cheadle.
I don't watch videos.
We've played it in here.
Oh, really? I don't listen to that.
Okay, you've probably heard at least 7 cuts off the album and just didn't know it.
Probably not.
Okay, well, anyways.
I'm not a Kendrick Lamar fan. Not to say that he's not a good musician. I know that people love him and all that, but like, not for anything. I just have not gotten into it. You know, I really can't invest my time and falling in love with a lot of shows and musicians, and because then I get too consumed with other things outside of what I just can't.
Okay, you can listen to music and like an artist and still carry on with your day.
I watch TV shows and don't even watch the shows. It just be playing
in
the background.
He doesn't binge
watch. No, they play in the background.
Nothing.
Like, I don't.
Okay, well, anyways, the Pulitzer Board.
What's wrong with
it? Well, Law and Order, I do. Law and Order.
The Pulitzer Board called on Monday and said that the work captures the complexity of African-American life.
Congratulations to Kendrick.
Yeah.
What else is going on?
Well, here's a question because this is a highly debatable thing.
Okay.
What are your favorite hip hop albums of all time? That's a very hard question.
Ready to Die.
Okay.
Ready to Die. Yes. Yeah.
That's on all of our lists.
Man, Ready to Die.
Yeah.
Cardi B's new fucking album.
I need you to stop. What? I mean, shout out to Cardi, but what? Is that your of all time Invasion of Privacy? You're putting that on the list before, like, say, I don't know, Illmatic, Reasonable Doubt.
Well, I'm getting ready to go interview Khalees today, so no, Illmatic's not on my list. But
listen, okay.
I will say that I love Nas.
Sometimes we don't like the messenger, but we like the message.
Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Yes.
Miseducation.
That's definitely on my list.
Definitely has to be.
That's definitely on my list. I'm going to take it back to New York. Only Built for Cuban Links, Raekwon. As dope.
Never heard it.
Oh my.
I haven't.
I'm going to need you to listen to it.
I like the Wu-Tang album from like 19 whatever, but.
Yeah, Enter the Wu-Tang.
The Chronic album was amazing.
Eminem.
Yep. Marshall Mathers.
Marshall Mathers.
Oh, the double disc. Yep. All Eyes on Me.
Mm-hmm. It takes a nation of millions to hold us back. Mace. Public Enemy.
I never got into them.
I love.
You know, I was never about the whole struggle thing. That struggle music.
But here's the thing: is it's so relevant right now. Like at least every other day, I'm blasting like "Welcome to the Terror Dome" or what is that? Black Steel and "In the Hour of Chaos."
Yeah.
Ugh, live, and then Mad Villainy, MF Doom, and Madlib. Mm-hmm. Y'all are finding out a lot about me and my musical things.
The Niggas in Paris record was hot. You know, one record that I really do like, I do like Kanye West, Jay-Z, Rick Ross, and Nicki Minaj, Monster. Mm-hmm. I like that record.
Yeah. No, well, we're talking about like full on albums.
Oh, San Pablo.
Really?
Kanye's album?
Yeah, before late registration, before college dropout.
Never played those.
What?
I've heard the songs. I've heard this.
Lord.
No, listen, I've heard the songs, but I've never played the albums.
My Dark Twisted Fantasy, even.
Yeah, whose man's is this?
I don't
My Dark Twisted, My Dark Twisted Fantasy is on the Power album, right? I've heard that album.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that album.
But so, Pablo.
But College Dropout, I've watched one video. What's the workout video? That's it? I don't know that album.
You more of a
I'm an R&B.
Isn't Jesus Walks on that album?
Music?
I'm an R&B
Jesus
guy.
Walks is on that album.
I like Jesus Walks. I saw him and Yolanda perform that on the award show.
Okay, so.
But I don't bump that shit. I just don't listen to. Like, if you go through my life.
As one of the greatest songs he's ever made.
Back in the day, I used to listen to Mobb Deep and Lil' Kim and all in Placebo and all, like, really, E-40. I used to listen. That shit made me so evil. I had to start listening to R&B music and gospel and things that make me happy. I can't listen to that. I don't relate to that shit. Lil Uzis, Lil Yachty's.
We cannot complain. We cannot compare the Uzis and the Yachty's right now to fucking talking about.
Yeah, but some people right now would tell you that Tekashi's the greatest hip hop rapper to ever live.
And on that note, we are going to move right along and start talking about orgies. okay. I know that you're very excited about this, Jason.
I don't do orgies no more.
No, you want to be a moderator. Okay. So for everybody who's wondering what the hell we're talking about, there is an orgy world record attempt set to go down in Las Vegas. And it's happening on June 2nd, so I don't know, just start jerking off and getting yourself ready.
Well, I did tell my staff to research how I can become a monitor. They are hiring monitors, people.
Okay, so hundreds of people are gathering in Las Vegas on June 2nd to compete for Guinness World Record of the biggest orgy in history.
There's 1,000 people confirmed.
Yes, so Sin City 8 event will include one weekend of different themes, contests, and parties that are all centered around one activity, sex.
And so they're hiring people like me who are morally responsible to walk
morally in. Irresponsible.
Morally responsible. I just slipped up. And to make sure that, you know, all the fucking is happening according to the guidelines. You know, everybody can't just go and start slinging dick and pussy everywhere. Like, that shit is not appropriate.
Okay, now hold on 1 second here. So Japan currently holds the record after 500 people engaged in sexual intercourse together on May 4th, 2006. I would really like to get a hold of that video footage, because the Japanese are freaks.
This is what I'd like to know. Do they do all this fucking with the lights on?
That you've got who? How are we gonna see?
No, I'm gonna be a monitor, bitch. I'm gonna be there.
I'm sure that yes. Okay, so
hey, listen, I'm gonna tell you right now. Okay, if I do go, let me tell you how it would change my life. First of all, I don't like just watching people fucking in person, because it's really uncomfortable. Because the moment somebody looks up at you and sees you in your eyes, and they see you watching them get pile driver to get a fist up their ass, you know they have some level of discomfort. That shit is uncomfortable. I don't want to watch that.
You know what's interesting? I used to go to hedonism a lot.
What is that?
Hedonism, it's this resort in Jamaica where
They
got a nude side and a prude side. So on the nude side, you got to be nude. And the prude side, you can be. It's clothing optional.
Whatever. Were you ever nude?
What side did you go on?
I went on both sides. Well, here's the reason. Is I used to shoot all my calendars and magazines there, because I mean, shit, nobody was gonna have a complaint about, you know, whatever state of dress I was in.
True.
So, you know, and it was Jamaican, it was dope, and they were really accommodating.
That's different than somebody penetrating your asshole with a goddamn pipe.
I was gonna say, I saw a lot of sexual stuff there. Sexual intercourse.
People were fucking?
I saw people fucking.
In Jamaica on the beach?
Well, on the resort grounds.
How'd that work? Wagwan.
Yeah.
These deep.
Well, listen, I'm going to apply.
It was never the staff piece.
I'm going to apply to be a volunteer at this orgy, because I do think there needs to be some level of maturity.
And that's you? Right.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to run around throwing hot sauce on people's pussies just to see what the fuck happens.
You know what? They're going to get you. You're going to get at how I can't. You anyways, look.
You know what I want to do? I want you to repeat those dates, because I want the fellas. If your girl is saying she's going to Vegas around this time, understand what's going on.
She's getting fucked.
She's going to get,
she's getting fucked.
Yeah, she's going to get her back blown out. So anyway, so the date is it's June 2nd, and the list of amenities set to be provided include.
Can we stop blowing backs out in 2018? Like, come on now.
Absolutely not. Are you kidding me? So I'm dying to get mine blown out.
Wait.
Whoa.
I'm sorry.
Wait a minute. So you still expect niggas to blow your back out at 41?
Are you kidding me?
That's amazing.
Wait. Blow your back out.
Yes,
do you hear how that sounds?
Yes. Hurt me.
So he has to beat you like a CFDS worker taking
hold
a child.
Hold on to my shoulders.
She wanna, yo, hold on. Yo.
See, on
she
one of our,
get kneed in the ring.
On one of our previous shows, we talked about the roast beef sandwich when your pussy hanging out looking like it needs to be sutured.
My shit still looks like a flower in bloom. All right, motherfucker? It's pink and cute.
We put flowers on my mom's grave.
It smells really good.
She wants to get a backflip done on her sternum.
So you want to get your back blown out?
What part of my prime are we missing?
I understand that shit. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Thank you. I like.
I don't.
I'm aggressive. I'm a Scorpio. I'm an alpha chick.
You ever got your back blown out, Jason?
No.
That's why.
And you know what I've said before? I think I've said on the show. You know, people be like, "Oh, I know he had to get fucked before." No, I'm gonna tell you why I would not, because I could never. And this is me being very honest. Mm-hmm. For the first time, I've never said this. I could never have a nigga mm-hmm. walking around these streets, mm-hmm. talking to another nigga, saying, "I fucked that nigga." I personally could not handle that. I would swear to God,
right?
I shoot that motherfucker. I wouldn't be able to handle it.
My
ego would not be able to handle a nigga out talking about me like that.
So if your girl is in Vegas on June the 2nd, chances are she's participating in this orgy. The amenities they're providing are 22 queen-size beds. Why not king?
She getting her roast beef sandwich dug out.
Yoga mats, over 2,000 condoms, lube, baby wipes, tissues, towels, bottled water, breath fresheners, please and thank you, and more. And you want to be an orgy monitor.
I do. I just feel like there should be somebody there that's responsible, that's of age.
Okay, and so the orgy monitors and orgy concierge will be on deck to make sure that all participants are comfortable and consensual, and there's going to be masks available.
If you need stimulation in any way, I'm there to help.
Will there be fluffers there?
That's what I would be doing.
I recently just found out about a fluffer. You know what's messed up?
Do you know what a fluffer is, Jason?
I'm a fluffer.
Nah, you don't know what a fluffer is.
I'm a fucking fluffer. Y'all talking to Jason Lee. Do I know what a fluffer is? Yes.
Explain to everybody what a
fluffer
is.
Yeah, what's a fluffer?
It's where the people that keep the dicks hard.
Yes.
Yeah, that's me.
Usually they're doing it by blowing.
Yo, I think that's worse.
I'm a fucking fluffer.
Okay.
I think that's worse than being a porn star. If your girl's a fluffer,
yeah,
that means your girl is sucking dick like for a living. Your girl is really sucking dick, and you just don't know about it because she's not a porn star, but she a fluffer. So she low key sucking dick.
I love how you looked at me with like pure angelic intentions to make sure that I didn't know what I was talking about when the whole time. Of course, I'm not no fucking fluffer professionally.
Yeah, there's a few of us in this room that are really unprofessional.
There's people
fluffers.
Really out there sucking dick and getting paid for it legally.
But my question is, how do you introduce your wife at like your family reunion? Hey, this is my wife, everybody. You know, Chanel, she sucks dick for a living.
Legally.
Okay, well, I don't know if there's any fluffers going to be at the orgy.
Would you be a fluffer?
No.
But like if the money was good, like.
No.
Nobody would know.
No.
Seven-figure payday.
What if they told you,
listen, I am choosy about the boyfriends who I blow,
do you
okay?
Do you know how much scent air you could buy if you were a fluffer?
You're so funny. I don't know if they want that correlation being
made. I can bet you get your daily harvest in if you was getting your fucking fluffing on.
I'm
that Beachbody.
I am good. Anyway, speaking of sex, we're going to mosey on over to Mariah Carey, who's having really interesting couple of weeks. You know, she came out and said that she's been suffering from bipolar disorder. Not a lot of us were surprised after that TRL incident where she came in wearing Daisy Dukes and pushing a wheelbarrow of popsicles. And everybody was like, waka flocka, what's going on over here? But whatever. So her former manager is claiming sexual harassment because Mariah Carey was always naked. You should ask Nick about that. So Mariah Carey's former manager claims she was repeatedly sexually harassed by the singer because Mariah was constantly naked in front of her. Her name is Stella Stoppler, and she's preparing to hit Mariah with a massive lawsuit, which she's going to win because America's the most litigious country in the fucking states. I could sue somebody for having bad breath and assaulting my fucking nostrils.
Well, first of all, if you do, it should be EJ Johnson. But let me tell you something really quick.
Jesus Christ.
Let me tell you something. Everybody know that nigga breath smells so good. But let me tell you something. Stella, what's her last name?
Stella Stoppler.
Bitch need her ass beat. And I'm going to tell you why. All these fucking managers who really want to be famous. This is why I'm not letting no nigga rep me or no bitch rep me mm-hmm. who wants to be famous. There's only going to be one star bitch. It ain't going to be you.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem. This person, Mariah Carey, she's an icon. Mm-hmm. She welcomed you into her life. She welcomed you around her children. She welcomed you to manage somebody. You have to be very vulnerable to be able to be managed, because you got to share all your fears, all your concerns, all your vulnerabilities.
And they see all your dirty laundry.
Not to mention, this is the bitch that set up the performance that she bombed on New Year's Eve and had her out there looking like a fool. You're supposed to be protecting your talent.
Right.
Now that y'all fell out, because I ran into this manager at Takaya on Sunset, and I was like, oh, yeah, you're Mariah Carey's manager. She was like, former manager. I'm not working with her anymore. Mm. She got fired after the New Year's Eve thing. My whole thing is, how do you then go out and tell somebody business? Because we just wrote a story on Hollywood Unlocked today that Mariah Carey was hospitalized after she thought Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, and
Prince
were coming to dinner. Where'd that come from? This manager.
Stella alleges that Mariah has a substance abuse problem, which has been, you know, widely discussed, and also fails to take her meds for bipolar disorder. So
I think that's fucked up.
Yeah, she's kind of, it seems like she's kind of kicking her when she's down. It also seems like Mariah's people are trying to get out in front of this.
I'm going to tell you,
talking about her bipolar diagnosis.
Let me tell you what you should do, Mariah. Give me a call. I will ruin Stella's day. Every day she wake up, it'd be some new shit. Because I don't like nothing like that. You know, I feel like, you know, yeah, we all have heard that, you know, Mariah likes to sip. I've been around Mariah where she sipped a little bit, but she's still, I mean, who don't sip a little? You ain't been around me when I've been in a rage drinking.
I have definitely been around
some shit
you.
Up.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fucked up, man.
Right. Okay, well.
Do you know how many jokes me and Antonio did about Mariah Carey during Wildin' Out this last season?
None.
Zero.
None. You know why?
Why?
Because you
it's
ain't
not
got.
It's not fun to make fun of somebody who has mental.
They've already done it. Everybody's done it.
This is old. Like, I just feel like we're just more creative than that. Fuck.
Right.
Stop hiring these bastards that'll tell your business.
Right. All okay. Right. Well, another thing that's popping off in the news right now is Starbucks is under fire because there's a boycott underway after police arrested two black men for not ordering. And so since then, Starbucks has issued an apology, of course, like all these big corporations do. And they are now closing down all these locations, like 8,200 locations on May 29th, which is weird. It's my father's birthday. And they are going to send all their employees for racial sensitivity training of some sort. Okay, first of all, you need more than a day. That's
I had
one.
Breakfast number at Starbucks today.
Okay, so you're not a part of the boycott?
No, because listen.
You don't boycott shit.
Okay, here's the deal.
You boycotted going to Black Panther.
Wait, what?
He wouldn't go see it.
You don't want to go.
It's a whole other story. We ain't got time for that.
I've been to Wakanda,
nigga. Yeah, we ain't got
time
for that.
So I had breakfast at Starbucks today because I'm supposed to boycott Starbucks because some idiot made a fucked up mistake. Not mistake. I'm going to take that back.
Decision.
Did some fucked up shit at a location. I'm now supposed to boycott the entire brand of Starbucks to send what message?
How strong the black dollar is.
Okay, come invest in the city of Compton for Asia Brown, who's running for Congress. Mm-hmm. Show your black dollar. You know, again, that whole black dollar thing. Diddy posted some shit on his Instagram the other day, and I text Lorianne Gibson, you know, my thoughts on it. Not an attack towards Diddy, but I said earlier on the other show, black excellence has to be more than a hashtag. We can't get mad, pick and choose when we get mad. And then we go away. 2 months from now, we will never think about the Starbucks incident again. We'll be off onto the next shooting. What about the nigga that just got killed, shot 20 times in Sacramento? Ain't nobody mad about that?
Oh, in his backyard?
I'm drinking my Starbucks. But I'm still going. I mean, now, if they would have said, you know, we defend this behavior, we stand behind this employee, that's one thing. They didn't. They took corrective action. The manager's been fired. The whole place is shutting down to have racial sensitivity.
Yeah, the police commissioner explained that his officers did not want to make the arrest and wished that it didn't happen. So I don't know. You might be right about the fact that a boycott seems to be, you know, kind of irrelevant at this point since action's been taken.
Right.
You know, the guy's been fired.
And look at timing. Brandon T. Jackson is to launch a black-owned coffee shop across the nation.
Again.
Brandon T. Who?
Brandon T. Jackson. You know, from the lottery.
Was he in Roll Bounce?
A lottery ticket with
Bow Wow. Bow Wow. Sorry.
He got that kind of money? Shit. Okay.
No, we didn't say his money was long. But anyway, I just personally think that Starbucks did the right thing by holding the people accountable.
I agree.
And like, I did a video last night that went viral where I talked about it. Let people live. I had oatmeal today. No, I didn't have oatmeal. I had a protein pack. Mm-hmm. That was amazing.
Yeah. Only reason why I'm not going to Starbucks is because I can make my own damn coffee at home. That shit's too expensive.
Okay. Well, we ran out of time, but before we leave, let's just send our love and prayers to K Michelle. I did text K. You know, she was supposed to come on our show, and she didn't tell me why. Her management told me she had to get a procedure done. I didn't know it was as serious until I saw her crying on Instagram.
Yeah.
So my heart goes out to her, and I've texted her, and I hope she recovers.
Yeah, and I really want to see what she kind of, you know, what she does in terms of continuing the message to make, you know, young girls aware of the perils of plastic surgery. Because, I mean, silicone, like, started to enter into her bloodstream. Like, Jesus. She was close to death. Yeah. Several times.
Well, now she'll have something to come and talk about on our show.
Yeah.
Not to mention, she is taping this season of Love and Hip Hop, so I'm sure this will be a part of the storyline.
I think she's really brave as well. The fact that she's being so transparent to her fan base and to basically the public at large with everything that she's been going through, because when it comes to plastic surgery, you know, society tends to be, expect you to get it, but then they're also judgmental on the other hand, you know? So I got to commend her for that as well. And we do wish her a speedy recovery. Mm. Yeah.
Well, on that note, people, we're going to get to some music. So my body's so exhausted. Just got back from Coachella. I feel like I've had a full workout because you're just walking around that festival chasing Beyonce all day. So yeah, I have not, you know, when I came right back, I thought I would take a day off. I said, I'm going to take Monday off and relax. By the way, I forgot I had my shades on, but I look so cute today. I thought I just didn't want. But yeah, I got back. I went to the gym. And then after the gym, I went to my trainer and my body's sore. But I wish I could have just did something in my house.
Sometimes I'm not able to go outside, you know, and train for whatever reason because, you know, I've got work piled up on my desk. And if I go outside, I'm going to get distracted, you know. Oh, look at the birds. Oh, look at the, you know. So I like Beachbody On Demand because it's a streaming service. It's got like a plethora of different exercises. So I never get bored because, you know, when it comes to me and my physical activity, I like to do yoga one day. I like to do strength training another day. I like to do, you know, hardcore cardio another day. You know, it just offers everything that I could possibly think of, so I don't get bored and my body doesn't get used to stuff. So I really like it for that. You know, right now I'm kind of obsessed with the 3-week yoga retreat. I'm in a very Hakuna Matata kind of.
You sound really relaxed. That yoga retreat must have calmed your ass down.
It is. It's dope. And the thing is like their workouts are super quick. Like if you only have 10 minutes to devote to working out, then you can do some kind of HIIT action, which means high intensity interval training. And your body will keep on, you know, your metabolism will be working all day.
Well, one of their trainers, Shanti, who I know personally and who I've done some of his workouts online, they really will. They'll get your body right.
Insanity.
You will be pouring sweat in your home.
Yeah, Shanti created Insanity, and it is insane how much weight people have lost. Like they've become different people after, you know, doing the Insanity program. It's really intense, and you kind of got to work up to it because, I mean, that wins me.
Well, listen, the decor in my living room is actually pretty cute, but I think I'm going to move the table out the way and I'm going to try this cardio.
You might have to.
I'm going
to
try this cardio one and see how it goes. So,
yeah, you need some space.
Okay, so how can people get signed up or get this program?
Okay, well, right now we're offering a special free trial membership, so you don't have to commit. When you text UNLOCKED to 303030, you'll get free access to the full entire platform for free. All the workouts, the nutritional information, and support totally free. Again, just text UNLOCKED to 303030. And what I love most about that is, you know, when people commit to wanting to, you know, have a change in their life, the nutrition part is the most difficult part for people to wrap their minds around.
Especially when you live by Katsuya.
That part too. I mean, those baked crab hand rolls. I don't know how you don't run across the street every single day.
Oh, spicy tuna, crispy tuna.
I know, yum.
Anyway, exactly.
But the nutritional information that they offer is just, it's so amazing because it just kind of gets all the confusion out of the way. You simplify your diet. You start with the exercise programs. And a month later, look at you, all transformed and stuff.
Okay, so here's a challenge I'm going to give to all you fat fucks sitting on the couch listening to me right now. Let's do this cardio program together. We're going to be cardioing our ass off.
Yeah.
So go to, where do they got to go again?
All they got to do is go to, where are we going? Beachbody On Demand.
And then enter?
Yeah.
Wait, listen. Right now, okay, so again, I'm going to challenge all you fat fucks. And I'm going to tell you how we can get this done together, okay? Right now, you can get a special free trial membership. Like she said, if you text UNLOCK to 303030, that's not that. Waist size, breast size, and ass size. That's just a number you got to text.
You
to
wouldn't
get this
want
free
that
trial.
To be your bust, middle, and hips.
First
because
of all,
you would just be a sausage.
Just a big old round fat.
You would just be
sausage.
Like a sausage. So no. To access the free membership, free trial membership, you have to text UNLOCKED to 303030. There you go.
All right, 303030. Let's get dirty. We're about to wrap up, but Tonio Skits, this is my new wildin' out homie who actually gave me some encouragement while I was there, came on the show, so now I get to go into your world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Make me a star.
You are a star.
Oh, thank
I ain't,
you.
There ain't much I got to do. Yeah. But I do want to point out... if the fans want to see me back on the show, you know, and Gio wants to take another vacation, I'll be ready.
Gio's working on a show.
What's the name of the movie again?
So thank you for coming on the show. And we're out. Peace.
Bye, everybody.